And what I love about when we look at the facets of what evidence-based medicine means is that it's like a three-circle Venn diagram. And the first one makes sense. It's like best available research is the first circle. The second circle is clinical judgment. But the third one is the one that I feel like we forget and is the most important piece of all. And the third circle is patient value. And so together we get to make these shared decisions according to their values and the severity of their symptoms of what feels right for them.
Welcome to This is Perimenopause, the podcast where we delve into the transformative journey of perimenopause and beyond. I'm one of your hosts, Mikkel.
And I'm your other host, Michelle. And we know firsthand how confusing, overwhelming, and downright lonely this phase of life can be.
Join us as we share real-life stories and expert advice to help you navigate this journey and advocate for your best health.
We used to think menopause signaled an end, but really, it's just the beginning.
Today, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsor who's helping make this podcast possible, and we're genuinely excited to share this with you. All right, let's get real about GSM, those genitourinary symptoms that can hit you like a truck in perimenopause. We're talking vaginas that feel like the Sahara Desert, the kind of itching that makes you want to crawl out of your skin, and burning that turns basic activities into actual torture. When it hit me, I was literally questioning my sanity.
Same, same. I had to break up with my spin bike because my vulva was basically staging revolt. But then Iris came into my life and, can I say, game changer. And oh my God, their lubricant. Wow.
Right. Thank you, Dolores Fernandez. She's the amazing naturopath who created these products without the nasty additives that can turn your bits into a five-alarm fire.
So whether it's serious dryness, constant itching, or the bedroom blues, ladies, do not suffer in silence. Use code TIP20 at lovemyiris.com for 20% off. That's TIP20 at lovemyiris.com.
Because life's too short for an angry vulva and vagina.
A beautiful, hot mess. Wow. That's how today's guest, Dr. Cara Dionisio, describes perimenopause, acknowledging both the chaos and the opportunity in this transition. And Dr. Cara knows what she's talking about. She's a naturopathic doctor who fell down this perimenopause research rabbit hole in 2019. She brings impressive credentials to this conversation as one of the first naturopathic doctors in North America to earn the Menopause Society Certified Practitioner designation. She teaches clinical menopause education in academic and professional settings and leads the Confident Clinician Menopause Fellowship. With her comprehensive evidence-based approach and refreshing perspective, she has helped thousands of women develop strategies to address what she so lovingly calls a beast. What makes Dr. Cara truly special is her ability to merge medical knowledge with real-world wisdom to help you reclaim your health and reimagine your future. Because, as Dr. Cara emphasizes, suffering is not an option. What are we waiting for? Let's jump in. Welcome to the show, Cara. We're so happy to have you here today. We would love to know and have our listeners know a little bit about your backstory and who you are. And specifically, one of the things that we love is that we've heard you say that menopause care found you. So we'd love to know how that happened.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm super honored to be in the rotation with all your fantastic guests you've had. And I was thinking of both your names. I'm like, there's the documentary, The M Factor. You guys are the double M Factor.
Right? Oh, I like it.
And I love what you're doing. I love the energy like that you bring and the facts and the guests. It's just really great to be here. So thank you for having me. Yeah. And menopause definitely found me. I did not seek this out. I don't have a choice in it because I'm now fully in love with being a menopause clinician. But absolutely, I started out like most clinicians, no matter what field, whether you're a family physician, a nurse, a physio, we do not learn menopause. You know, from what I knew, it was hot flashes, hormone therapies. You don't know what you don't know. And, you know, to many of us, we were going in blind and probably weren't acknowledging, you know, the stories of the patients in front of us, because we really just weren't trained to see or recognize the depth of this transition. And patients also didn't have the vocabulary to come to us to really put things together. So it was like a double whammy of a problem until I started really like thinking, interesting, like I would with any health problem. Like, I don't know if I'm really helping this patient. Like, let's look into this a little bit further. And that was the end of it all. And I did what like I love to do. It's like my favorite place is like a pack of highlighters and a stack of printed papers. Like, they have to be printed. They're no virtual.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. And I have a picture of me with a stack literally this big. It probably was a year long of like going down the rabbit holes of looking at menopause research. I like to say I was in the asshole of PubMed. That's a saying of a colleague of mine. But like, it's like it just unravels the more and more you read the research and you realize it expands out, right? Like, oh my gosh, this branches out into bone health and cardiovascular disease and patient experiences and culture and all of the things that it brings in, how much it goes to all the ologies, which was just fascinating to me. Like, it's not in this little silo. Like, it's gynecology, but it's endocrinology and like all the ologies that we can come up with. We get to like bring all that we know about health and medicine into one transition. But then it also really has this interplay with like a more biopsychosocial lens, which really is like we get to meet our patients and women and individuals in the menopause transition at the messy middle. It really has this cool human intersection on top of the geeky science, and like roll that all together. And it's just like both fun and an honor and challenging to just really be a menopause clinician at the height of it really taking off. Now, I always say I was here before it was cool. It was not cool when I was doing it. No one was talking about it.
How long have you been doing this, specializing here?
I think I started that rabbit hole was about 2019. So not as early as some, but definitely ahead of the big buzz. I'm not trendy. I'm the last person to follow trends. So that's not why I'm here. I really just fell in love, and I get to talk to the coolest women all day and really get messy with them and figure it out together.
That's amazing. Already just so inspired by what you've said. Your website says, "We help hormone change not suck, maybe even be kind of fun." I know a lot of our listeners' eyebrows just went way up, like, fun? Are you kidding me? You're talking about it like it's fun. And so maybe you could tell us how that hormonal change can be fun, not just for you, but for your patients, or how you help them find the fun, see the fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with a caveat that I have three favorite words. So the first one is paradox. The second one is nuance. And the third is curiosity. So like, I love seeing the nuance and like the give and take of any problem. Right. And so I feel like when we're sold a narrative of like the current narrative of menopause is like, this is scary. This is horrible. This is like the start of decline. This is the start of aging. You know, and absolutely, like, so many patients should feel like it sucks, right? They should feel like it's challenging, that they're not getting the support they need. Like, what do you guys hear? Like, what are the words that you hear from your I'm sure you hear all the words that are sucky and
brutal, atrocious.
Absolutely. And so,
for believing,
you know,
we could go on and on. It's shocking, and really it's shocking, and it's abhorrent that this is the state of play for someone who's perimenopausal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I don't like, you know, when we look at this paradox, it's like, it's not, it can be this or this. It's like, yes, and right. Yes, it sucks. Yes, it's hard. Yes, you don't have information. Your body's changing. You have no idea what's happening. And if you do, you're not finding the help that you need. You know, you used to be able to do certain things for your health, and they're not working anymore. your hormones were doing these things. Now they're doing this crazy thing in the middle of a roller coaster. And then they're about to leave the building. And it's really, it can really suck. It can be really hard. And I get so angry that we don't have answers for women, that there's not enough of, you know, people like me or people in general who can help support women. And so that's me acknowledging this can suck, but I'm here to help you, right? So that's the first part. And the second part is, and there's also some opportunity here. There also can be time, any transition, right? Whether it's a job transition, you know, a transition with your kids or a major life transition or a move, right? It's hard and challenging and difficult. And some days it's just like, how am I going to get out of this? But it's also an opportunity, right? It's like, we have this chance for growth. We have this chance to think about myself again, to think about my health again. And for very good reasons, maybe that has been on the back burner. We have this ability to think of what we want the next half of our life to look like, to like set more boundaries, to get rid of things that just really aren't serving us anymore. And it's time, because our body can't do it, our mental health can't do it, it's time to transition and really create a new path forward. And so, yes, it sucks, and there's opportunity. It's not passive. That opportunity does not come to you passively, but it's there for the taking with the right support. And so I understand people might be like, it sucks, and I want to take that opportunity. I want to know what I need to do, but I can't find any support. So again, it goes back to that missing piece. And then it can be fun, right? Like I've listened to your podcast. You guys laugh with your guests. When you're feeling supported and you have someone who's like, I get it. I understand. Let me tell you why that's happening and what we're going to do about it. Then it can be funny, right? It's like, my vagina is the Sahara Desert. My vagina is drier than a popcorn fart. Like, then we laugh and then we pee probably. Yes. And then we laugh, right? And so there is opportunity for this to like bring women together as community and like really talk and say, here's what I'm going through. Here's what I'm struggling with, but here's the funny side. Here's the sisterhood side. Like, here's the part that we also can have fun with it.
I seem to be using this saying a lot lately. You can laugh or you can cry. And like, I feel like that's where my life is at right now. Like, I could laugh or I could cry. And you just have to choose laughter. And also, as you said, like, reach out for support. And the more we talk and the more we share our stories, the more you realize that you're not alone in this.
Yeah, that was, your answer was really, really resonated with me, because when I think about my own journey, perimenopause sucked. I was not good. And that contributed to a lot of changes, but career change, having to put myself first sometimes and to prioritize my health. And because of it, I also get to spend a lot more time with Michelle. I got to meet Amy. Like, there are so many wonderful things that have happened because of the fact that my body changed in a dramatic way. But it also has given me an opportunity to live my life differently and to live my life better.
Yeah, it sucked. And look what's on the other side, because I finally, it took too long, but I did finally find that support. And then, like, the more we talk about this, the more you're having these conversations on your podcast, the more there's a chance, the more that there's menopause-informed practitioners like me, the more there's a chance for future women who are coming into this phase, it can suck less and be more of an opportunity. And so that's my hope.
Can we talk a little bit about that? You've sort of a few times danced around this. Menopause-certified practitioners. Who are these magical people? How do they become certified? What does this all mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the designation is called MSCP, or Menopause Society Certified Practitioner. But essentially, anyone with this Menopause Society Certified Practitioner designation has written an exam through the Menopause Society, And that exam is one that we have a textbook called Menopause Practice. And the exam is also based on all of the current guidelines. And so that's the hormone therapy guideline, the non-hormone therapy guideline, all of the consensus papers that were developed by the Menopause Society, really by the world expert. So what it helps to attempt to do is this certification at least gives a basis for, I have this knowledge. What I love about the exam is that it's not just like actually only one or two chapters of the textbook are hormone therapy. It really is a nice comprehensive overview of here is what we medically, physiologically, mentally, emotionally see are the changes in the menopause transition. And here's how we can support this phase of life. So it is really diverse and comprehensive. And I also love that it crosses designation boundaries. So there are a lot of medical doctors who have this, nurse practitioners, myself as a naturopathic doctor, pharmacists, I think some physiotherapists. So it's really cool that, you know, having written that exam, we have this common based understanding of here is the current standard of care. Here is what we need to understand to really serve this population, which I think is really nice and gives patients at least a little bit of something to hang their hat on when they're hopefully able to find a menopause patient.
So if my family doctor isn't designated, do I have to find someone different? Can I still speak with them about my menopause care?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, like that is the relationship. And if you have that base and that trust set up already, then ask them, you know, have the conversation and, you know, book a dedicated visit to say, listen, I'm coming into this phase of life or I am here. Where is your knowledge base? How can you help support me? And that's really the questions to start with and then go from there.
And then if you're not getting the answers you want or you need, that's when you can look.
Absolutely.
And how do we find a menopause practitioner, certified practitioner?
So the Menopause Society has a directory.
Okay.
So you can go right to their website. You can put in your province, state, location, and it will come up with anyone certified in your province or jurisdiction.
So that's amazing. So some people, because not everyone has the same journey or the same philosophies about medicine. So if they wanted to go to a naturopath versus an MD, they're all in one database. They can find everyone there.
I think we think, okay, this is medical. I go see a doctor and I get the results and the information I need. And it is medical and you should be able to go to your doctor. But it also is a life transition, right? So think about what we do for pregnancy, right? So we have clear standards of care. We go to our family physician. They order very defined first trimester blood work. We get an ultrasound at 12 weeks. You know, and again, at 20 weeks, we get our gestational diabetes screen. We're maybe passed on, you know, throughout to a midwife, or we are passed on to an obstetrician. So we have like a very clear medical pathway for supporting women in a time when they're growing a human, which is super important. But the other thing of pregnancy is not just medical, right? It's like we have baby showers, we have support groups, we have prenatal classes. You know, we listen to podcasts and figure out what the best stroller is, right? Mm-hmm. It is a medical topic, but it's also like cultural. We have cultural traditions. We talk to our friends. We like build the support network around the doctor-patient relationship. And I really think that menopause lends, it really needs that support, right? Like it's not a disease. Really think outside the box of how you can create the people around you that you need. Absolutely understand that not everybody has the accessibility to pay for all of these people. But when you can, there are lots of people that can fill some various and specific roles in getting you the care and really the more comprehensive or holistic, you know, support that you need around you to like really get through this transition, but also thrive through it.
I'm going to add one more that you didn't mention that Mikkel has talked about in the past, and that's a really great pharmacist.
Absolutely.
It doesn't cost any money, but if you've got a great relationship with your pharmacist, they've got a wealth of information. Some of them can prescribe.
Absolutely.
Like it's yeah, another good one. Mikkel wrote a blog about that. Check it out.
Love it. A good pharmacist is they're like, I think, a forgotten part of the team. But you can go and say, hey, I just got this prescription. This is great with my other medications. Is there anything I need to know? So they can be a really great team member as well.
Let's talk about your team, your clinic. Is it just you? And how busy are you? I know for a fact that a bunch of people listening right now are like, okay, how do I find this woman?
Well, I'm a little busy, nice. But I love what I do. So yeah, my team, it's Dr. Karen Associates. I used to have a big team of 10 people.
Oh,
so
wow.
I used to actually had an integrative health team with physios and mental health professionals and whatnot, which they were amazing. But I was more business clinic administrator than clinician. And I am a clinician at heart. So my team is like small and nicely curated. So it's myself, my most amazing office manager, patient core coordinator, Lisa. And then I have an associate, Dr. Bronwyn Hill, who is another naturopathic doctor and Menopause Society certified practitioner. She just is coming back from mat leave. So, which super happy for her, but it has certainly made, I've been taking care of her patients while she's on maternity leave. And it has meant that our wait list has gotten a little bit long, but she is back. And we are hopefully sorting that out. And I'm here in Owen Sound, Ontario. And Dr. Bronwyn's physical location is in Creemore. And we both are able to see this virtually in Ontario as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. When we first met, we talked a little bit, or you shared with us something you called the art of clinical practice. And I'd love to delve into that now if we could. And through that, tackle some of the myths and misconceptions, how you go about actually achieving individualized treatment, right? Because there are guidelines and then there are humans, and connecting those two is not as straightforward as putting a cast on a broken leg, because I think that is really the critical piece here when we talk about great menopause practitioners.
Absolutely. And I am going to use that, Mikkel. There are guidelines with your hand over here, and there is like human, or it's like logically you medically know it's here, but then getting said human, myself included, right? To do what I know I should be doing is a whole different story. And I love, so I'm an evidence-based clinician, and that means that I use the best available evidence from research. Not one study, but like, what do we know in totality from the best research we have in order to guide clinical decisions? And what I love about when we look at the facets of what evidence-based medicine means is that it's like a three-circle Venn diagram. And the first one makes sense. It's like best available research is the first circle. The second circle is clinical judgment, right? So a clinician that uses that evidence and uses their best clinical judgment to make decisions. But the third one is the one that I feel like we forget and is the most important piece of all. And the third circle is patient value. And then let's make shared decisions with our patients that is aligned with their value. So I love that that circle is part of evidence-based medicine. And I think of it as a ladder, so, or a menu, right? And so together we get to make these shared decisions according to their values and the severity of their symptoms of what feels right for them. And those are just the tools. And for me, I will tell my patients, I'm going to give you options from down here, and we're going to have options all the way up to here. So that could be, let's think of something, heavy menstrual bleeding, right? So it's like, I could give you some ginger that can reduce flow by maybe 25%. We can use ibuprofen in this way that might reduce flow by 30%. Or the next level up on this ladder is, how about you talk to your doctor? There's a medication called tranexamic acid, might reduce flow by 50%. After that, we have birth control pill and IUD. Maybe that's something we can chat to your gynecologist about. And up here is hysterectomy, right? And people are surprised. It's like, I come to a naturopath for natural things. I'm like, no, no, no. You come to me for strategy. And so whether it's ginger or hysterectomy, there's no judgment on that. Neither are good or bad. It's like, what will solve the problem to the degree that it's impacting your life? And what is the best medical choice in consultation with your gynecologist, your doctor, and what feels right for you?
And judgment-free choices.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes you'll hear this in the menopause space, like, I went to my doctor and they gave me this and that doesn't feel right. And I'll be like, I can see why that was offered. That is a valid choice. What you weren't offered was an understanding of why that was the choice on that day and what other options there were.
When it comes to mood, do you also include menopausal hormone therapy in that ladder?
Absolutely. I do wish that our current guidelines said that is, and that is, it doesn't currently say this is an indication for hormone therapy, but it's a really amazing bonus. And the research really supports that. We're less clear about starting hormone therapy for the benefit of mood when we started after the last period. It's ridiculous that we don't have more, but the current research absolutely suggests, and I'd say my clinical experience absolutely suggests, that starting hormone therapy in perimenopause especially can for some women have a really beneficial impact on mood.
And that's, I think, too, where that nuance and that clinical judgment becomes so important, because to your point, so the Menopause Society guidelines don't say that menopausal hormone therapy is gold standard for mood. It does say that there are level 2 and level 3 supporting evidence that shows that it can be beneficial, particularly for depression, but also I think there is some information there that suggests that it's also good for anxiety. And then you can see it in your patients, right? When they come back and maybe they started taking it for hot flashes, but suddenly they just aren't as anxious or they don't have those scary days of depression, right? So that's where the nuance comes in. And it's also, it's not approved. Health Canada does not say that that is a valid indication. So if you have a practitioner who's not menopause certified, right, they don't have that nuance to be able to offer a patient something that might be the absolute right thing or the best thing for their particular need.
Yeah, like we have the research, we have the clinical judgment, because yeah, here, I started this. I didn't actually think my mood needed any improvement even. And mm-hmm. I just feel more like myself. And that's someone who didn't even come in with a mood problem. And we have patient values to say, I understand after I say to them, this is not on the actual list, but we have the research. And they say, my value here and how this is affecting me is that that's okay with me. That's mm-hmm. informed consent and that's shared decision making. And I think the other nuance to this art of practice is that it's not always menopause, not always perimenopause.
Exactly.
And so I'll say to a patient like, hey, here's the rationale for hormone therapy. Here's where I think it really could help you. Mm-hmm. And I'll say like, hot flashes, that's estrogen. We give hormone therapy. Your hot flashes really should go away 95%. You might have that one remaining. First thing in the morning is always the tenacious one that sticks around.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I hear that's a really sticky one. So it's like the nuance is it could be partially hormone therapy will help and partially it won't. And we only know by doing, like, if you do a trial, you know, A, B, and C, A and B are way better, like amazing. And C and D don't change. And then we say, okay, that's not related to this. What other things do we need to look at? Again, that nuance they don't hear on Instagram. And I love being that conduit between here's what I'm hearing on Instagram. What does that mean for me? And how could this therapy help me in particular?
Yeah. And I think like the hot buttons right now on Instagram are menopausal hormone therapy in the context of cardiovascular health is one of the big ones, right? And you've got some practitioners saying, yes, it does. And other practitioners saying, no, the guidelines say it doesn't. Am I correct in saying that neither extreme are correct in that instance?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want me to shed some light on that topic?
Yeah, please. Because I know it's very confusing and it's hard to make heads or tails of it.
You're right, because the current guidelines say hormone therapy should not be used for prevention of cardiovascular disease.
Unless you're under the age of 45 and you've gone through menopause.
Yes. That early menopause is like a, not different, but we really have to think a little bit differently about supporting early menopause. And so this hormone therapy, it's not currently in the guidelines for many reasons. We don't necessarily have the long-term outcome data to say this prevents this. We do have the data to show when we're starting hormone therapy in that window of opportunity, so under the age of 60 and within 10 years of menopause, adding that estrogen to a really healthy blood vessel can do some great things. But should it be our strategy for everybody to prevent heart disease? No. Do we have the research? Probably. We have some research that in the right women who haven't, like, you know, that have healthy blood vessels and we give hormone therapy, can it keep protecting them? Absolutely. And as a naturopath, I say, I can for sure say, you know, a healthy diet and whatever variables we bring into that can be part of preventing heart disease. I know that an active, healthy movement lifestyle can be part of, like, those things we know for sure. Does hormone therapy help?
Fair.
Probably. But I just don't, I think where the guidelines are coming from is we just don't have enough to say for sure that universally for all women, this is what we should be doing. Again, the nuance is, and it's difficult on Instagram because you'll say, if you want to protect your heart and not have heart disease, you need to start hormone therapy. And I think we get in a lot of trouble when we say all people, all women should do this.
I think one of the challenges too is that, and not that these influencers are preying on women, but women want an answer. They want an easy fix. They don't necessarily want to do the work. Like you just said, nutrition, movement. I know sleep is one of those. Like that, now I'm like, oh my God, I'm already exhausted. I don't have time. Like this sounds like more work for me. And they just want a quick fix.
Yeah. And I think it's very challenging to get nuance in on a social media square and in a reel or like, even a 10 carousel, like it just is very difficult.
I think it's difficult to get that nuance. It's also very easy without intending to do so to impart a negativity on, for example, hormone therapy. You know, when a practitioner does come on to say, you know, it's not appropriate to prescribe menopausal hormone therapy as preventative for cardiovascular disease, right? There is going to be nuance applied to that by the listener, right? So it's very, you can quickly see how things become so polarized and heated and, right? Social media is dangerous because it's the nuance. You can't provide the nuance, but it gets applied regardless.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll have, that is a very big thing that, you know, the patients that sit in this chair beside me, you know, I'll have patients say, I have no symptoms. I'm feeling great. I'm, you know, exercising, I'm eating well, like, but I want hormone therapy to protect my heart. And I can say, I'm like, I understand why you've heard this message and I'm open to talking to you about it, right? This is what we know. Here's what I know about your risk. Here is how much fiber you're eating. Here are all the things that you're doing. Like, you are doing such great things for your heart. It may not be necessary. It's probably not necessary to add in hormone therapy.
And there are risks with any medication, whether it's taking ginger as a supplement or taking something natural, a herb, or a pharmaceutical product. There are risks. And I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but you know, I took birth control for years and it worked well for me. And then I went off and had kids and all the things. And then I started feeling really lousy. And I had some pretty scary premenstrual things going on. And so a doctor I finally landed on who listened to me and said, I think you're in perimenopause. And I was so relieved. So let's try this low dose pill. Great. I was a shell of a human being on this pill. And that doesn't mean it's bad. Why I'm going off on this tangent bringing this up is if you have someone who is doing so well and then they add in something as a preventative, it could wreak havoc.
Yeah. And I can see why that type of that patient is so proactive. They want to be more proactive. And it's just assuring them, like, you're doing great stuff here. And then I'll have another patient. I'll say, there is risk here. One of the things we need to do in perimenopause is like, where do we have buffers and where are we a little bit, our bucket's about to fall over, right? Because as soon as you lose estrogen, your cholesterol is going up, your blood sugar is going up, your blood pressure is going up. I will have another patient and I'll say, you're not sleeping, you're soaking the bed, you're getting 4 hours of sleep, you're making poor food choices because you're being exhausted. And you're, you know, you're doing okay, but you have heart disease risk factors. Hormone therapy is not here for preventing heart disease, but if we don't get this under control, if you're not feeling better, then all those things are going to get worse. So this is going to improve your heart disease risk because we can get you sleeping and doing the other things and also not suffering as like a minor side thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that, right? We're not supposed to suffer and feel like shit and be miserable all the time. Right, right. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that.
I'm being flippant and facetious, but oh, my God, what? We still so wear that as a badge of honor. It's got to stop.
As Michelle says, if you don't laugh, you cry. That's like,
yes.
Like that. That is not an option. It's not an option out of my office. Suffering is not part of this protocol.
Absolutely.
Well, and listen, we want to have you back like again and again and again when you're available. And I know we know you're really busy, you know, so if we could maybe even have you on for little short spurts to address a particular question that a listener or a follower has, we would love to have you on because I am so excited to get this out into the world because how we've been talking about this is not how menopause, perimenopause, hormone therapy, all of the things. It's not how it gets talked about, especially on the internet. And this is going to be so helpful for so many people.
Hope so.
Oh, I know so.
I think the last thing I'd like to try to convey is like, you know, as I have a patient in my chair, my brain is clicking all the things, right? It's like, where's the risk? What assessment do we need? What does that tell us? How are they feeling? You know, what is the first three things that really need to get solved? And what's the long-term game plan? I really feel like we need to give women more agency over, you know what you need. I know you're having trouble accessing it, but what are some things you know you can do? What do you have control over right now while you're searching for a good menopause clinician or whatnot? We all know some things we can do, right? And I always say perimenopause is like, it's a chance to lay these foundations, right? We can't change that we have this roller coaster on top of it. We can't change the hormones are changing. We can support you and treat you and you don't have to suffer through that. But the more that we can lay a great foundation for our current health and future health, it doesn't solve everything, but it's really good to base everything off of these foundations. This is not sexy on Instagram. Eat your vegetables, Mediterranean type of diet, eat your fiber, you know, eat good nourishing food, not too much, definitely not too little. Like don't be trying to survive on coffee till two, like nourish your body, eat your vegetables, move your body. And yes, like don't get worried about the fancy stuff. Like again, like Instagram will be like, aerobic exercise is not good for your cortisol in menopause. I'm like, no, like I love running. I'm going to go run. And that is what I'm going to consistently do. And you can't tell, like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah. And if you're barely able to squeeze in lunch and breakfast, don't start flipping out about what kind of creatine you should be taking.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, get the foundations in place. Don't get fancy. Be boring. It is a time to be boring and, like, as consistent as possible.
You just said my new favorite word, consistent. And that's my new mantra. Consistency is a superpower. Maybe I didn't get to the gym today, but I'm about to have a bath and I'm waiting for the tub to fill. Maybe I'm going to do 6 push-ups, or not even full push-ups, because I can't even do a full push-up these days, right? But, like, that's something.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a time when we can relearn, you know. Patients will be like, give me the diet, give me the calorie, like, give me the creatine and all this. I'm like, I barely do supplements. I'm a supplement minimalist. There's maybe a couple that are evidence-based that your health needs. Don't get fancy, just do something, right? And part of the frustration of this time of life is you feel stuck, you're immobilized. There's more information than ever, and women are more confused than ever. They don't know what to do. And that is immobilizing. You almost freeze. And that is the opposite. You just need to take action with the simple things that you know are right in front of you, like lift weights while watching Netflix, right? Like, it.
I brought my weights upstairs because yes. I was like, otherwise I'm not doing them.
Exactly. And and also progress over perfection. If you fall off and you don't do weights and you eat gummy bears, fine. The next day do weight. Like, don't worry about, like,
You can't be perfect. Life is not perfect. No.
Just keep going. And so a lot of that art of practice is, like, really helping with that habit change. So part of this, which everybody listening can do, is, like, what is one thing I can do? How can I prove to myself I can set a goal and show up for myself? Because I don't have a great track record. I have a track record of saying I'm going to go to a boot camp 5 days a week, and then that lasts 3 weeks, and then I've proven myself I can't set a goal and I can't follow through.
And I've failed again.
Yeah. So I'm like, and we know that the best goals are self-motivated. So I'll ask a patient, what's your movement goal? And they'll say something. I'm like, go smaller.
Like, I'm definitely, like, coming to your practice. Like,
so you are doing nothing right now and you're all of a sudden going to go to the Y 5 days a week?
It's not going to happen.
No. Like, how about... do you think you could, like, what about 2? Oh, I can do 2. I'm like, you can do 2, and you're telling your partner you're doing 2, and you're putting a checklist on the fridge, and I need you to show up consistently and set a goal and follow through on that goal. And then we can, like, get fancy after that. We might go to 4 times a week.
Maybe.
Yeah. So I don't want to give the message that you need this unicorn menopause practitioner. I would love that and wish that for everybody. And we all do need a menopause specialist, or at least build a team to get the support we need. And in Canada, that you have to be creative. But there's so much around this that is accessible and you have agency over and you can change right now. I'm not saying that's everything, but it's something.
Thank you. Kara, what is the one thing you want every woman to know about perimenopause? How do you sum all that up?
It's funny. I think you might have said this at the start, but perimenopause is a beautiful hot mess. It's a time where you can listen to your body again, where you can make changes, where you have to listen to things that need to change, and you can kind of embrace. And it's hard to embrace something that sucks, but there are parts of it that are hard and suck, but there's also opportunity and parts that can be life-changing and wonderful. And I just wish for everybody to actually have elements of both. I think we can reframe it. And I do think in ourselves, if we just take a minute to say, what do I want this to look like? What's important to me? What do I need to change? Right. And that is not usually a drug or a hormone. It's a little bit bigger than that. And so I just hope that everyone maybe listening today can get a slightly wider angle lens of what this could mean for them.
Thanks so much for listening to the show.
If you like what you hear, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more women can find us and get a little better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
We also read all the reviews, the good, the bad, and the ugly, to help us continuously improve our show. We would love to hear from you. You can connect with us through the podcast, on social media, or through our website. Our information, as well as links and details from our conversation today, can be found in the show notes. This podcast is for general information only. It's designed to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal journey through perimenopause. The information and opinions on this podcast are not intended to be a substitution for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. The information on this podcast does not replace professional healthcare advice. The use of the information discussed is at the sole discretion of the listener. If you are suffering from symptoms or have questions, please consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.